CBS News, I'm Nick Young, live in Peggy's Cove, Nova Scotia. In a scene that will be repeated throughout the day, grieving family members are arriving at this rocky point on Nova Scotia's southwest coast to spend some moments near where their loved ones died Wednesday night in the crash of Swissair Flight 111. First, they're debriefed inside four Army tents, clergy on hand to offer comfort. And then those who wish can walk about 100 yards up the side of a rocky promontory where the lighthouse stands. Just beyond, on the windy ocean side, is a special viewing area. Some of those who've come so far this morning have openly displayed their sorrow, others shield it within. A few bring bouquets of bright purple flowers. All bring their grief. The search for the black boxes continues, and later today, investigators will release transcripts of the final exchanges between the pilot and air traffic controllers. I'm Nick Young, live in Peggy's Cove, Nova Scotia. Now with more CBS News, here's Claudia Marshall.
Reaction is rather subdued to the confession by a leading opponent of the president to an extramarital affair. The media was just this close to breaking the story that Dan Burton fathered a child with another woman, so he admitted it to the Indianapolis Star. The Indiana Republican congressman says he wants to protect the privacy of the woman and their son, who is now a teenager. Indiana Senator Republican Dick Lugar says his sympathy is with Burton. A former Democrat state official, Ann Delaney, says she's heard more than she wants to know about Burton's sex life. President Clinton wraps up his trip to Ireland today with what else? A round of golf. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller is traveling with him.
Thousands of people filled the streets of Old Limerick, giving thunderous cheers to President Clinton at the final public appearance of his six-day foreign trip. At the outdoor event that had the feel of a campaign rally, Mr. Clinton was honored as a peacemaker for his role in helping to broker the Northern Ireland peace agreement. And the president urged the people of the Emerald Isle not to be turned back by those who want to kill the peace process.
Remember what it was like on this day, looking up this street, looking up that street. This is you at your best. Do not let them break your will.
But the cheers may fade fast as the president heads back to Washington tonight, where talk of resignation and impeachment is increasing in volume. Mark Noller, CBS News, with the president in Limerick, Ireland.
House leaders meet Wednesday to talk about possible impeachment proceedings against the president and about who should get access to Kenneth Starr's report. The hospital that switched those two baby girls 3 years ago reportedly did it again in March. Only this time they switched the bodies of two infants who had died. The Washington Post says the University of Virginia Medical Center admits the remains were switched when an employee failed to check the cardboard tags on the body bags. A spokesperson says, thank goodness the parents had not left the parking lot before they discovered the mistake and switched the coffins. This is CBS News.
KNX 1070, Los Angeles.
Hello, I'm Victor Kiam. The more I fly, the more I see people using earplanes to avoid ear discomfort, clogging, or popping. Earplanes may look like ordinary earplugs, but they're a scientific breakthrough. To explain, here's Dr. Sig Soli of the world-famous House Ear Institute, where earplanes were developed.
The air pressure inside a plane changes dramatically during takeoff and landing, and it's the speed of those changes that causes most ear discomfort. The House Ear Institute invented an earplug with a pressure regulator. The plug is designed to slow down the changes to balance air pressure on both sides of the eardrum and eliminate discomfort.
Here's what pharmacist Sam Miller of Los Angeles says.
Earplanes really work. I use them personally, and I recommend them to everyone.
Why suffer when you don't have to? Get soft, comfortable, and safe earplanes or children's earplanes. Don't take off without them.
Available at Long's, Save-On, Rite Aid, and other stores.
New York City Mayor Giuliani fought tooth and nail to keep this from happening, but the so-called Million Youth March is set to start today in Harlem. Not exactly a million, more like 50,000 are expected. But this young mother who is waiting along the march route now doesn't care.
For the youth, and that's all I'm about, is for the youth. I got my baby out here, and he's going to be a member of this day, a part of this day, and this is going to be a great day.
Opponents call it a hate march. One of the organizers has used the word bloodsuckers to refer to Jews. Meantime, in Atlanta is a Million Youth Weekend, those events endorsed by the NAACP. Mark McGwire did not hit a home run last night, but this fan didn't seem to mind.
He's good for the team, good for baseball, and good home runs.
59 home runs to be exact. Sammy Sosa smacked number 57 last night. Both the Cardinals and Cubs play today, and they play each other Monday and Tuesday. I'm Claudia Marshall, CBS News.
Good morning. On this Labor Day weekend, when we celebrate the dignity of work and enjoy the fruits of our labor, I want to talk to you about the continuing strength of America's economy and what we must do to continue our progress in the face of increasing uncertainty in the global economy. As you know, I am just completing a trip to Russia, which has had a great deal of difficulty as a result of the loss of investment from overseas, and to Ireland, which has done much, much better because of its commitment to open trade and its ability to attract investment from all around the world. At home, yesterday we learned that the unemployment rate remained at 4.5%, more evidence of the continued health of the American economy. At the same time, as financial turmoil has struck several countries, particularly in Asia and in Russia, and is now being felt in our own stock market. This proves the point I have made again and again since taking office. We are in a global economy, and we are affected by events beyond our shores. We cannot ignore them. And when we do things to help others meet their economic challenges, we are helping ourselves. Earlier this week, I asked the chair of my Economic Council of Advisors, Dr. Janet Yellen, to report to me on the overall state of the American economy today. What I heard from Dr. Yellen should be reassuring to America's families. While the Asian crisis has dampened exports, especially for our farmers, and caused losses for some financial institutions, the pillars of our prosperity stand solid. Inflation and unemployment are still at their lowest levels, and consumer confidence near its highest level in 30 years. We still have a historic boom in business investment, and we're still creating jobs, 365,000 last month alone. Perhaps most important, standards of living continue to rise. Wages are growing at twice the rate of inflation, the strongest real wage growth in over 20 years. After decades in which income stagnated in our country, a growing economy means real opportunity for millions of families. The opportunity to buy a home, take a vacation, know your children will be educated, save for your retirement, live out the American dream. The bottom line is, for all the quicksilver volatility in the world's financial markets, the American economy is on the right track. From autos to computers, from biotech to construction, our industries continue to lead the world. But we have an obligation to keep America on the right track, and a duty to press forward with the strategy that has helped turn our economy around. First, in this time of financial uncertainty, we must maintain America's hard-won fiscal discipline. Our economic expansion is built not on the illusion of government debt, but on the solid foundation of private sector growth spurred by low interest rates. Now we must use these good times to build a secure retirement for the baby boomers and a secure future for our children. Again, I will insist that we set aside every penny of any budget surplus until we save the Social Security system first. I'll resist any tax cut or any new spending plan that squanders the surplus before we've even had 1 year of black ink after 29 years of deficits. Second, we must invest in the skills of our people. That's the key to long-term prosperity. I'll work with the Congress in coming weeks to enact our agenda to make American education the best in the world. From more teachers and smaller classes in the early grades, to extra help with early reading, modernizing our schools, connecting all of our classrooms and libraries to the internet by the year 2000. Third, we must master the complex realities of the new global economy. It can be a source of tremendous strength for America. Indeed, about 30% of the remarkable growth we've enjoyed in the last 5.5 years has come as a result of our expanding trade. I've said to Russia and our Asian trading partners, if you take the tough steps to reform yourselves and restore economic confidence, America will work with the international community to help you get back on your feet. I ask Congress to step up to its responsibility for growth at home and financial stability abroad by meeting our obligation to the International Monetary Fund. There is no substitute for action and no reason for delay. The International Monetary Fund is a critical device to get countries to reform and do the right things and return to growth. Without it, they won't be able to buy America's exports, and we won't be able to do as well as we otherwise could do. Markets rise and fall, but our economy is the strongest it's been in a generation, and its fundamentals are sound. Let's stay on the right track and take strong steps to steer our nation through the new global economy so that we can continue to widen the circle of opportunity as we approach the 21st century. Thanks for listening.